Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Kerala and Jordan's expedition into the archives last night ended with a furious argument between them, and now Kerala fears her mission may be in jeopardy. Chapter 28. Morning, Kerala yawned as she shuffled up to the table where Grievous, Wick, and Clegg were seated.
You almost missed breakfast, the guard said as Grievous slid over to make room for her on the bench. They'll be shutting the doors any moment. Are you all right?
Late night, Kerala replied, planting her elbows on the table and cupping her chin in her hands, her eyes half closed. Slowly, she became aware that Wick was practically vibrating with an excited, gleeful energy. Turning her head, she then noticed that Grievous had a faintly smug expression on his face, something she didn't think she'd ever seen before. Captain, if you were a cat, you'd be purring. This only widened Grievous's smile. Something's happened, she said, sitting up straighter. What? What is it?
Benito, Grievous said in a triumphant whisper, is being expelled from the Abbey.
And Aliphane, Wick chimed in as Kerala came fully awake, seeing as how she's his sponsor and all.
She stared at them, one to the other, then at Clegg, who by comparison, for once, looked like the most serious of the three men.
It's true, lass, the old cook said. The monks found him asleep in the bathhouse this morning, in one of the rooms where they control the water flow. Apparently, that's not a place where a guest is allowed.
Kerala's mouth fell open. Expelled? She gave a quiet laugh. That was fast.
Beg pardon, mistress?
Never mind. I'm still half asleep. I just mean, it's so sudden. I would have thought he'd, you know, get a warning, a fierce talking to.
I know what you mean, Wick agreed. No offense meant, but the monks here never struck me as that strict. Maybe they thought he was going to poison the water supply.
Kerala shook her head and spread her palms. And Allie's gone too?
That is being discussed, Grievous added. She and the abbot have stepped into the kitchen for a more private conversation. Most likely, she is attempting to talk or buy her way out of this.
His smile widened even further.
And once they are outside of the abbey, we will have them.
Kerala was still thinking about the events of last night. She imagined the monks checked the Hydra works each morning as a matter of course. Naturally, Farran would know that, she thought. How efficient to simply leave him there to be discovered, with no way to account for his being there. Let the abbey's regulations do all the work. Untraceable. Then she realized what Grievous had said. I'm sorry?
We outnumber them 2-1, Grievous said, as calmly as if he was wondering what was going to be for dinner that night. We should have little trouble gaining the other half of the map.
He continued to look at Kerala, gauging her reaction to his suggestion. Then, frowning, he leaned forward and sniffed the air.
You smell of smoke.
Clegg smirked.
He's got a point, lass. I didn't want to say anything, but if I didn't know better, I'd say you passed the night in a keffi pipe den.
He chuckled.
I didn't see any of those herbs in the greenhouse. Are the monks growing them in secret somewhere?
Kerala groaned, resting her face in one hand as she slumped over the table. She'd overslept, and not wanting to miss breakfast, had chosen to eat before heading to the bathhouse. Now, Farran's comment about getting the stink of alchemy out of his hair came back to her.
Mistress, Wick asked, what about the captain's idea, going after Aliphane and Benito? Once they're out that gate, it's a sure thing they'll run for my poor quick as cats. We won't get a better chance to take the map from them.
You're forgetting those pilgrims outside, Clegg warned. They seemed quite willing to start trouble on our way in. You think they'll stand idle on our way out? Especially if we pick a fight with Alessandra Fane in the middle of their camp?
Wick glared at Clegg, but it was Grievous who spoke.
Your caution surprises me. Of all of us, I would have thought you would be the first to suggest pursuing them. I pick my fights carefully, Sabrian, Clegg threw back. It's how I've lived this long. Personally, I would have thought you wouldn't be so keen to go tearing pell-mell after the daughter of Drax and Fane. What were you planning to do? Ask for the map? You think she'll just hand it over?
He leaned across the table, his voice low.
Are you prepared to act like a pirate?
Kerala and Wick both tensed, each reaching one hand toward the person seated next to them, but to everyone's surprise, Grievous only smiled.
This is not piracy. This is war.
He looked at Wick, then at Kerla.
The Duke and Draxon Fane are at war, and by accepting His Grace's hospitality and assistance, I have chosen my side. In war, it is a matter of duty to strike at the enemy where he is weak, in the hopes of bringing the conflict to a swift end. Through Benato's mistake, Mistress Fane has put herself in a vulnerable position.
He spread his hands in acknowledgement.
I agree that the pilgrims outside are a risk, but it is one I am willing to take, for we will not get a better chance.
Clegg frowned, but before he could reply, Wick knocked on the table.
Heads up, here she comes.
Kerla turned, hearing the quick steps, seeing Allie Fane's face pale with cold fury.
Nicely played, Allie said as Kerla rose from the bench to stand in front of her. That offer to trade information? Very nice. Throw out just enough line for me to bite. Kept me from reeling Benato in, so he keeps spying on Pharaoh and gets himself caught.
She closed her eyes for a moment, getting herself under control.
But the game's not over, and I won't make that mistake again.
I imagine not, Kerla replied.
So you're leaving? There's a hearing to decide that, Allie replied with a mirthless laugh. Like as not, we'll be on the road this time tomorrow.
She raised her head to look at each of them before coming back to Kerla.
So, making any travel plans yourself?
Allie tossed her head defiantly, the morning sunlight reflecting off the rubies and gold of her earring.
Well, do your worst, and remember this. I see any of you on the road, the first thing I'll do is put that map in the fire. What do you think of that?
Kerla was about to reply when the gleam of Allie's earring struck her eye, making her wince. For an instant, she saw only the shape of the design blazing behind her eyelids, not the color of the gems. And that was when she remembered where she'd seen it before, the lone earring she'd found on the night of the Duke's fete.
You can take that surprised look off your face, Allie demanded, staring down at Kerla. It's not as if you wouldn't do the same, were the situation reversed. And I've offered you a compliment. The least you can do is have the grace to accept it.
Kerla's mouth had gone dry.
Who designed your jewelry?
Whatever Allie had expected as a reply, that was not it.
What? She asked, thrown off. I commissioned it myself. It's an old family emblem, hasn't been used since my grandmother's day. You really have a problem with red gems, don't you?
Grandmother, Kerla breathed, her legs suddenly weak beneath her.
She preferred amethysts to rubies, didn't she?
Allie frowned, suddenly wary.
How did you know?
She began, breaking off a moment later as she stepped back. She looked as if she was about to ask something else, but at the last second held her tongue, remaining silent. With cold, furious eyes, she took another step backwards, then turned on her heel and strode off toward the women's dormitory. Kerla sagged onto the bench. Wick stood up, leaning over the table toward her.
Mistress, what's wrong?
Nothing, she said, gasping for breath.
Images and fragments of conversations flashed past like flaming arrows, each one igniting a portion of the inescapable conclusion that filled her mind.
The amethyst earring with the stylized F. The F stands for Fane. Allie's grandmother favored amethysts, and I found that earring in the secret love nest on the ducal estate, likely used by the Duke's grandfather, Marcus Kohaya.
She put a hand over her mouth, staring blankly at the floor.
And Tesca said the one thing sure to anger Draxon Fane is to remind him that he's a bastard. Oh, try its mercy.
Mistress?
Wick asked, snapping her out of her reverie.
I'm fine, she said, forcing herself to relax. I might be wrong, jumping to conclusions. All the pieces fit, but they might also fit some other way. What did Galen say? Do not twist facts to fit a theory. Take your time. Oh, but it makes so much sense!
She wondered if the abbot had another bird he could spare to send to the Duke.
Really, Wick, I'm fine.
As you say, mistress, Wick said after a moment, settling back down. So, should we start packing up as well? We know her hearing's not till next morning, but I wouldn't put it past her to slip out today and get a head start on us.
Kerla drummed her fingers on the table, thinking, "It wouldn't hurt to be ready to leave at a moment's notice," she said at last. "As soon as breakfast is done, pack up." At that moment, the doors to the dining hall shut with a resounding boom, ending all conversation. The abbot and three of his staff came out to the long table at the head of the room. As always, one of the five seats was empty, and Kerla realized that each day one of those senior monks was in the kitchens, working alongside everyone else. "Tomorrow will be the sixth day we've been here," she thought, as the abbot concluded his invocation and the monks began their silent prayers. "The abbot will have his turn back in the kitchens. We've come full circle. But I haven't accomplished anything yet. Jordan hates me. We haven't found Grievous's island. I haven't had a chance to talk to Faran about anything. Teska would have handled all this so much better, even Ali Fane being here." The noise around her began to rise as the monks completed their prayers and began to speak amongst each other. There was motion out of the corner of her eye as one-fifth of the monks began exiting the kitchens, carrying trays with mugs and pitchers of water and milk out to the tables. She glanced up, curious, noting that among the moving figures were a few smaller ones, and she saw that they were the children she'd seen around the abbey, doing their own shift in the kitchens. "That means today I should also be seeing..." "Ah, Jordan," Grievous said next to her, and she turned, seeing the youth passing by with a full tray. Jordan paused, his gaze sliding nervously over Kerala. "Have you by chance found that transcript you were seeking?" Grievous asked him. Jordan winced. "Not yet, sir. I'm sorry." He began setting mugs and pitchers down on their table.
"Water or milk, lass?" Clegg asked, reaching for two mugs.
Water's fine," Kerla replied absently as Grievous made a disappointed sound.
"That is unfortunate, young man. I would very much like to read it, but there should still be time for the interview you desire, if you can get it for me today."
He glanced at Kerla.
"We are likely leaving tomorrow, you see."
Jordan reared up to his full height as he shifted his focus from Grievous to Kerla, suddenly angry.
"Oh, are we? Well, what if I don't want to go with you? If my father wants to see me, he can come here himself."
Kerla's eyes flashed wide with shock, while Wick, Grievous, and Clegg all stared at Jordan as if he'd suddenly begun reciting the epic poems of Al-Kef.
"And if he's coming, he'd better hurry. In 6 months, I'll make my own way in the world. Good luck to him finding me after that."
"What in the hells are you talking about, boy?" Wick snapped. "And mind how you speak to Mistress Kay, or you'll have more to complain about than a broken nose."
Jordan didn't even look at him, instead continuing to glare at Kerla.
"Do all his soldiers talk like that? Doesn't sound any different than those damn sword priests outside."
Wick slapped his hands against the table and rose up, his eyes blazing. But Grievous put a hand on top of Wick's, calmly urging restraint.
"Whose soldiers are you referring to, young man?"
His eyes flicked to Kerla, then back to Jordan, for the first time really looking at him, and a dawning realization rose in the Sabrian's face.
"Jordan, stop!" Kerla pleaded, standing up. They were attracting a lot of attention. Every monk at the neighboring tables was staring at them, and more were becoming aware of the disturbance, craning their necks to see what was going on.
Jordan turned to look at Grievous, then back at Kerla, still angry.
"They don't know either. Were you ever planning on telling them?"
"What?" Wick demanded. "What don't we know?"
Kerla's mouth felt dry, and she reached for her mug.
"All right, all right. After breakfast, there are some things we need to discuss," she said, before tipping the mug back and taking a long swallow of water.
Instantly, she knew something was wrong. Her tongue began to burn as the water washed over it, a bitter taste that she recognized, but much stronger than she'd encountered before. The pain followed the water's course as her throat began to swell and her stomach cramped, roiling with nausea.
"Mistress," Wick called, "what's wrong?"
Kerla raised her head to reply, but could only stare helplessly at him, watching him seem to retreat away from her, her vision tunneling. The mug fell from her numb fingers, shattering with a crash as the floor began to tilt beneath her, her balance going awry. Staggering forward, she crashed into Jordan, who fumbled awkwardly to take hold of her. Then, bouncing off of him, she collapsed completely. Wick was diving over the table to reach her, but Grievous was already there, catching her head before it struck the floor.
Kella, look at me,
he said, his voice crackling with command as he eased her down.
Can you speak?
Weh,
Kella gasped, fighting for breath.
Weh!
I'm here, mistress,
the guard said, scrambling next to Grievous.
What's wrong? What's happened?
Kella rolled her eyes to the side, staring at the shards of the mug and the water puddled around them.
Weh!
She tried again.
Yes, mistress, I'm here,
Wick said again.
It's going to be all right.
Grievous, on the other hand, saw where she was looking and pulled one sleeve of his tunic over his hand. Dipping the end of the loose cloth in the water, he brought it to his nose and sniffed it.
This is familiar, he said, presenting the soaked sleeve to Wick. Smell this.
Wick sniffed it as well, wrinkling his nose.
It's...
He sniffed it again.
It's willow bark. That's the elixir Teague gave us back in the quad.
Willow bark,
Grievous said, nodding.
And she did not drink any of it, do you remember?
She didn't?
No, and judging by the smell, this is a much stronger dosage.
He looked into Careless' face, his own tight with concern.
This is a poison to your people, is it not?
Kerla could only nod, her muscles beginning to tremble. It felt as if an invisible hand was strangling her, her breath now coming in a thin wheeze. The tunnel of her vision was growing longer. Grievous and Wick were retreating further away. Sounds swirled around her as several monks drew close.
What has happened? Is she choking? I have developed a procedure for clearing a blocked airway. Her hair! Look at her hair! It's turning green!
Green? That's father's wisdom. It is green!
Damnation!
Came another voice, farther away, which she dimly recognized as Clegg.
That fool boy's run off! Hey, that brought her the water!
Jordan!
Wick snarled. Oh, when I see that little bastard again, he's dead!
I'll get him!
Clegg growled. You and the Sabrian stay with her!
Kella!
Came Grievous's voice, very close. What scared her the most was that she couldn't see him, couldn't see anyone. Her vision had narrowed to a single point of light, the tunnel now miles long.
Is there an antidote? Is there something your people use to counter this? Kella!
And then even that became faint, and she heard nothing more. Her next sensation was a gentle pins and needles spreading through her entire body. With the sensation came warmth and comfort, a relief from pain so deep that she'd been unable to perceive anything beyond it. After that, she was aware of something hard pressed against her lips and a trickle of liquid being poured into her mouth. She coughed once, and the deep, ragged breath she next drew was the sweetest she'd ever tasted. But the warm, tingling sensation continued, spreading evenly. As awareness returned to her, she recognized it as a spell infusing her, the pattern slowly and methodically neutralizing the toxin in her body. Her eyelids fluttered open, and she beheld Farran before her, under his illusion of Brother Pharaoh. He held a small metal cup in one hand, the other gently gripping her shoulder. She was in a small room she didn't recognize, lying in a cot, propped up to a half-sitting position with pillows. Pharaoh was seated on a chair next to her cot, while behind him, the abbot, Brother Hallam, Grievous, and Wick all hovered anxiously. Pharaoh smiled at her.
That appears to have worked, he said pleasantly.
Wick made a barely restrained shout of delight, pumping his fist in the air, his eyes red, while Grievous and both monks sighed with relief.
My thanks, Brother Pharaoh, the abbot said. How did you know that would work?
Pharaoh half turned to look at him.
Oh, that, a bit of luck, actually. It was something I came across years ago, suggesting that elves were vulnerable to the bark of the willow tree. The more I read it, the more it sounded like an allergy, such as some folk have for bee stings.
And the antidote? Hallam asked.
Pharaoh grinned.
A bit of quick guesswork, Father be thanked, drawing upon herb lore.
He turned back to Kerla and lifted the cup to her lips.
Now, drink all that down, gently. You're still very weak.
She felt his spell recede as he took his hand from her shoulder, leaving her bone-weary, but otherwise healthy.
I don't know if I'm qualified to be a physician for elves, Pharaoh said, chuckling, but I don't think a few days of bed rest is ever a bad prescription.
She smiled weakly, reaching up to take the cup with both hands, tasting a weak tea with a generous amount of honey to sweeten it. It was only camouflage, a means of explaining the result of a spell he'd cast upon her, but it soothed her sore throat all the same, and she sipped it gratefully. That was when she noticed the color of her skin, and a moment later, that of her hair spilled around her shoulders.
"Oh," she grated, her voice hoarse. "I did hear folk talking about green hair, then."
"I'm afraid so, mistress," Wick said. "Like as not the entire abbey knows by now."
"They do," Brother Hollam confirmed. "I am sorry, my friend."
"Is that a problem?"
The abbot sighed.
"As I said to you earlier, child, it is nothing more than over 100 monks, each dying to ask you 1,000 questions."
Kerla shrugged, an act which took more effort than she'd expected.
"Well, better than the alternative, I suppose. I thank you, Brother Pharaoh, is it?"
"Yes, I am glad I was able to be of service," he replied, rising from his chair. "If you will excuse me, I have a hearing to attend regarding the trespassing of that Sabrian fellow."
"As do I," Brother Hollam said. "We can go together."
"Of course," Pharaoh replied. "But if you wish, my dear, I will come by this evening to check on you."
He smiled at her again.
"I promise to confine my 1,000 questions to your health."
Kerla laughed. Pharaoh's performance was so convincing she found herself half forgetting his true nature.
"I would welcome that."
Everyone remained silent until Pharaoh and Hollam had left the room.
"I'm hungry," Kerla said at last. "Well, at least I think I am. I don't know if I can hold anything down right now, but I'd like to try."
"I'll have something brought to you straight away," the abbot told her. "Water and a bit of toast to start."
"And I'll be tasting it all first," Wick stated. "No offense, father, but someone's already poisoned her once today."
There was no anger in his voice or bravado, just a simple statement of fact. It reminded her of Tesca, bringing a bitter, sweet smile to her face. The abbot was grave.
"And I am deeply shamed for it. My dear, I have no idea how this happened."
"We know how it happened," Wick replied. "It was that boy, Jordan. He's the one who brought the water to our table."
"Jordan?"
The abbot looked at Kerla, utterly amazed.
That's not possible."
"How do you know?" Grievous asked.
"Because Jordan is the one who found Brother Pharaoh and sent him here."
Wick and Grievous shared a look of surprise.
"That is what Pharaoh told me."
"Why did he seek out Pharaoh?" Grievous asked. "Why did he not come here to the infirmary?"
"Because Brother Pharaoh is one of the abbey's leading experts on folklore," Kerla said. "Jordan's been studying with him, and I guess he thought if there was anyone who might know how to help a sick elf, it would be him. Father, could you give us a few minutes? There are some matters we need to discuss."
The abbot smiled.
"Of course."
Wick remained silent until the abbot had left.
"I was so sure it was that little popinjay. He was right there. Who else?"
Then he broke off, snapping his fingers.
"Ali Fane. She was there, and she's certainly in a mood to settle scores."
"No, the water arrived after she left," Grievous pointed out.
"Well, she was in the kitchen," Wick countered, unwilling to let go of his theory. "She could have done it then." "But how would she have ensured that the right pitcher would reach our table?" Grievous asked.
Wick frowned, having no answer to that. Kerla closed her eyes, feeling the pieces fall into place.
"She didn't do it, but it was likely done on her order."
There were no tears. The betrayal cut so deep that there was no pain. Not yet. That would come later. When she opened her eyes, both men were looking at her.
"Where's Clegg?"
Grievous nodded, having already reached that conclusion. Wick's reaction was a quick flash of surprise, followed by resigned acceptance.
"He filled my mug," Kerla said, "even asking me whether I wanted water or milk. Neither of you trusted him from the start. Turns out you were right."
"Well, I'll admit I never liked him, mistress," Wick said. "And you're right, it all makes sense. But I don't see why he'd do this now."
Grievous gave a grim smile.
"As an agent of the Fanes, he had to strike now. With her expulsion, his mistress has suffered a severe setback. we are virtually compelled to chase her down before she can reach Maipor and hire reinforcements. But with Kayla dead, Alessandro could return to Maipor with little fear of pursuit, and once there, prepare a reception for the pair of us.
Well, Triad be thanked, mistress. She took her shot at you and missed, Wick said. Do you still want to go after her? Even if Clegg's with them, it's 3-on-3, and I dare say we're still more than a match for them.
There is another question to ask first, Grievous said, his gaze meeting Carola's. Fraterno Bellum, on the night of the Duke's fete, I did a service for you, and so earned what you described as a favor.
I remember, Carola said.
He gave her a short, formal nod. I ask you now to repay this debt by telling me what your true purpose has been in coming here. He raised a hand before Wick could interject. I believe I already know, but I ask you, upon your honor, to tell me the truth.
Carola regarded him. He might be bluffing, hoping to flush the truth out of her, but she also knew how many hints she had inadvertently left for him to pick up since they had left Kohane, and she was tired of lies. If he's going to be angry, she thought, let him be angry at the truth. Taking a deep breath, she raised her head, speaking as clearly as her raw throat would allow.
Jordan is the son of Duke Stephen. Tesca was given the mission to bring him back to Kohane. When he died, that mission fell to me.
Wick made a strangled noise, while Grievous merely nodded slightly, his gaze sliding away as he digested the information.
"He's," Wick sputtered, "that little know-it-all? Him? Triad's mercy! I've been making fun of him since we got here! All those silly names!"
"Little Lord Broken Nose," Carola said, too weak to resist the laugh that bubbled out of her. "That was my favorite."
"And, it seems, the most accurate," Grievous commented, still staring at the floor. Wick groaned, pulling at his hair with both hands. "What of the Duke's intention to find the island?" he then said, looking back at her. "Was that a lie?"
"By no means," she promised. "His Grace believes that if your island is depicted on another map, this is the best place to find it. Bringing you here, helping you search for it, that's been a real mission as well."
"But ultimately a diversion," the Sabrian concluded. "Secondary priority, an extra safeguard for the boy. This way, the Fanes would direct their efforts at me."
"Yes, I'm sorry for deceiving you. I'm sorry for being a part of putting you in greater danger. But they are my orders, and my duty requires me to follow them as best I can."
Grievous took a long, slow breath, his eyes bright. The news had hit him hard, and Carola couldn't tell how he was taking it. "So, what happens now?" Carola was forming her answer when she heard footsteps outside, coming toward the door.
"We have company," she said, pointing toward the door. "It's likely the food."
Wick turned, hearing the footsteps himself a few moments later. He crossed to the door and opened it, looking outside. Then, suddenly turning stiff, he came back into the room, letting Jordan enter, carrying a plate with toast and a tankard of water in one hand and one of the Abbey's slender notebooks under his other arm.
"Gentlemen," the youth said.
"Milord," Wick said automatically, catching himself a moment later. Both he and Jordan looked equally embarrassed.
I'll get that," he said, taking the plate and bringing it over to Carola.
Then he lifted one slice of toast, sniffed at it, and took a bite from one corner.
"So," Jordan said, looking at Carola, "now they know."
"Now they know," Carola replied.
Next to her, Wick sipped from the tankard. There was a moment's pause while the guard sat there, rolling the water around in his mouth, swallowing it, and waiting. Then he nodded in approval and put the plate in Carola's lap.
"How are you feeling?" Jordan asked as Carola picked up a piece of toast.
"Alive, thanks to you. You were the one who went to find Brother Pharaoh. His knowledge of folklore did the trick. He was able to neutralize the poison."
"Brother Pharaoh," Jordan replied, picking up on which things Carola had and had not told Grievous and Wick. "He was the first person I thought of who might be able to help."
"Well, it worked. Now we've each saved the other. Are we even?"
"Yes."
The awkward silence stretched on for some time,
before Jordan crossed the room to Grievous.
"Captain, I just came back from the archives. Here's that interview you wanted. Tiberius Strabo, with Pierre Trigobbi translating."
Grievous was startled as he accepted the transcript, staring down at it with wide eyes.
"Thank you, Jordan."
Jordan looked at Carla. "I tried to get the two you wanted, Carrick and Delane, but I don't have access to that portion of the archives."
"Carrick?" Wick asked. "Who's that? Do they have something to do with the captain's research?"
"No," Carla said. "It's some research of my own. I knew someone with that name once and recognized it in the registry. I thought I might read the transcript and see if they were related."
Wick shrugged.
"You're casting a wide net, mistress. There's no shortage of Carricks in Terrandor, especially up north. The main branch of the family rules County Ferlin, or so I've heard, but there's a lot more cousins and distant relations as well."
"Oh."
Carla took a bite of toast and sipped some water, wondering where Tesca and his family would have fit into such a web.
"And the other name, Delane?"
The guard shook his head. "I've not heard that one before. Sounds Terrandon, though."
Carla shrugged.
"Well, I thought I'd take a look out of curiosity."
She looked at Jordan.
"So why don't you have access to them? Strabo's transcript is older. I would have thought that would be harder to get."
"So would I," the youth replied. "But those other two transcripts were moved to the restricted section at the abbot's personal request."
Carla sat up in the cot, ignoring the brief wave of dizziness that washed over her.
"There's a restricted section? What sort of knowledge is restricted in this place?"
Jordan shrugged.
"I don't know. I've tried to get in there more than once to find out, but the door to that section is locked, and I'm pretty sure the abbot's the only one who has the key. If you want to know more, you'll have to ask him."
"I will," she said, her curiosity piqued.
Her desire to read the transcripts had been a wistful one, a curious hope to learn a little more about Tesca now that he was gone. It had also been a tertiary priority, well behind bringing Jordan home and helping Grievous with his quest. But now, the idea that some part of Tesca's history might be somehow forbidden gnawed at her, setting her instinct on edge.
"Fratono bellum,"
Grievous's voice pulled her out of her reverie. He was sitting in a chair, the transcript already open in his lap.
"What are your plans now?"
Carla took a deep breath and stretched.
"Dutram and I agreed the Cutlass wouldn't be ready to sail for 2 weeks at least, and we left my poor..."
She paused, counting back.
6 days ago. So at best, it's another week before she sails."
She met Grievous's gaze.
"I can't risk going after Allie, even if I've got enough strength to try tomorrow. Not with Jordan along. You're welcome to return to Kohane with us, Captain. That's up to you, and I'd be glad for your company. If not, I dare say the Duke's credit is enough for you to continue your research for some time, should you wish to remain here. I'm sorry, but that's how it has to be."
"There is no need for apology," the Sabrian replied. "Your candor is appreciated. It reminds me of times in my career when duty required similar things of me."
He glanced down at the transcript.
"As for whether our courses diverge, that remains to be seen. I must consider all of this carefully."
"I still haven't said I'm going with you," Jordan put in, a touch of his earlier anger in his face.
Carla sighed, too tired to argue.
"Jordan, my orders are to bring you to Kohane, not imprison you there. Your father didn't arrange for you to grow up here as some sort of punishment. He did it to protect you from his enemies. You may be furious with him, but you have to meet him. After that, as far as I'm concerned, you can decide for yourself what you want."
"And if I decide I'd rather be back here?"
She smiled. She couldn't help it, seeing the struggle on his face, his desire to leave the Abbey vying with his fear and sense of betrayal.
"You won't. Don't take offense at this, Jordan. But the Abbot's right. It's not the Father that's calling to you. It's the world. And once you've been out there, you won't want to come back. Maybe to visit, to do research, but not to live here."
For a moment, he almost broke into a smile, almost agreed with her. But his pride wouldn't let him give in that easily.
"So, what if I don't want to remain in Kohane either?"
Carla spread her hands. That's between you and your father. I will say this, though. As the only elf traveling the Frieze, there are many who would want to force me into working for them, or keep me as some sort of prized pet. But when your father had me in his power, and he invited me to enter his service, I accepted because I realized that he would let me say no. He would have let me leave if I chose to.
She let those words linger for a moment, giving Jordan time to absorb them.
Our situations are somewhat different, I'll grant you, but believe me when I say that your father deserves the benefit of the doubt. Give him a chance.
Fine, Jordan said, trying to maintain a stubborn facade, but only half-heartedly. Then I will. This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Frieze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.